Things are starting to become much clearer, even though it's still hazy. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be with you, Barry. It's good to be back in the studio. Hey, we're trying to set a record 2 weeks in a row.
Well, actually, I think it might be 3 weeks in a row, if my memory serves me. But, you know, either way, it's good to be live and not be running best of right now, because usually, well, and I guess in one sense, though, Chuck, it is kind of sad, because usually during this time we'd be running best of because you and I would be at Camp American.
That's right.
Doing lots of work with young people. And helping train them in the biblical and constitutional frameworks that allowed our experiment in liberty to flourish for a time. But alas, this year we were not able to hold camp, and I for one am very sorry that that was the case. But again, we do what we do. You put it out there. You lay it forward for people, and if people won't pick it up and take advantage of it, then there's not much you can do about that.
Yeah, and actually Camp American would have been last week.
Yeah, that's right, this last week. Yes.
Right. Not when I mean it was the let's see, last Saturday would have been what, the 18th?
18th.
Yeah, that would have been the last day of camp.
Right. So it was going to be held earlier, because there's been a couple times when it's been the third week or the last week of June, but usually it's that second week. So
yeah, it's only when we can't get the camp. Yeah, that's usually what stops us. Somebody beats us to the punch on getting the camp.
Yeah, exactly. But anyhow, Chuck, you know, again, it's one of those things. It's kind of bittersweet, but hey, you know, it does allow us to be able to get in studio and start having actually continuation programs like we're having today, because folks who listened in last week know, or if you didn't catch us last week live, you can always go and download us from our website. I think LRY even keeps it up there for a little while, so you can download our podcast and listen to the previous program. But in the previous program, I left a little teaser, Chuck. I talked about Hillary Clinton, guns, and why a dead Supreme Court justice is important. Now, again, everybody is easy to figure out who the dead Supreme Court justice is. We're talking about Antonin Scalia, who recently passed away. And for many of us, that was a sad thing, you know, although we understand that, you know, God moves and works in ways beyond our understanding. It was just quite a shock to many people that Justice Scalia died earlier this year. It wasn't expected. And it had created a lot of furor for a little while, Chuck, over whether or not the U.S. Senate were going to take up and hold hearings on a potential replacement for Scalia before the November presidential elections, i.e. then giving Barack Obama another pick on the Supreme Court before he leaves office. And right now, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. You know, Merrick Garland was the nominee that Barack Obama has named, has put forth. The Senate has, you know, kind of toyed around with, yeah, we'll talk with him individually, but we're not going to hold hearings, because their idea is that since Obama is lame duck and outgoing in a few months, then they want to give the new incoming president, whoever that might be, an opportunity to be able to, at the beginning of their administration, put their stamp upon the Supreme Court. And I think that's interesting, Chuck, because Hillary Clinton's camp have been very vocal lately, especially surrounding the issue of gun rights. And one of the things that they've been saying is that it was a shame that you had these decisions that were mainly issued, the majority opinion, being written by one Antonin Scalia, who decided many of these cases, or wrote many of these cases, including probably the most famous one that we know of, And one that was most important for those who are Second Amendment advocates, and that was called the Heller decision, District of Columbia versus Heller. That was back in 2008, and this was a case that Antonin Scalia was the lead writer on, and you know, in a 5-4 ruling, they basically set up the fact that basically, yes, an individual has the right to own a firearm outside of a militia statement. In other words, they actually looked at the Second Amendment and said, yes, we're going to continue to create an ongoing context for the Second Amendment, and a positive context, as the founders intended. They didn't intend you to have late 18th century muskets. And only if you were in the militia and were called up in a time of war were you able to possess them or use them.
Yeah, that's an absurdity, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I think I saw one commentator say that the left has an originalist position on this issue, a very originalist position.
Yeah,
you can only read the Second Amendment in the context of the late 18th century, and you cannot modernize it. So you know, for all of the living document proponents on the left, this is a place where they consider the document dead and buried in the 18th century.
Yeah, exactly. This is part of the problem, Barry. We're originalists when we want to be, and we're constructionist living, breathing document when we want to be. Well, I try to be consistent, and you know, I've seen some things from people who were supposedly on our side of the aisle in the last couple of days, where it becomes obvious that why things like electing the quote unquote right president is the cure to everything, because they'll eke a pledge out or attempt to eke a pledge out of them to do this or that or another thing with the bully pulpit. And the fact is, when you examine this or that or another thing that they're trying to get these presidential candidates to promise, they have nothing to do with the constitutional authority of the president. And in fact, more and more and more people who call themselves conservative have less and less and less understanding of how the Constitution is supposed to work and what the constitutional duties of the president are supposed to be. And in fact, what the constitutional duties of the Supreme Court or the Congress is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why we're having these problems, because we've lost track of how the government was designed and how it's supposed to work. And so therefore we fill in the gaps. Well, and people will say, when you call them on it, they'll always say, well, I'm talking about reality here, not theory. Well,
right.
It's not theory. It's the law. Now, the fact that the law isn't being enforced has nothing to do with theory. It has to do with the fact that there's illegality everywhere in government.
Well, that's true. That's true. But, you know, getting back to the whole idea with Hillary Clinton, the point is that Hillary Clinton, obviously, as a candidate for United States president, really takes issue, because after the Heller decision, the courts used Heller to expand the protection of gun rights, because Heller was a federal case. Basically, it was saying that Washington, D.C., which is a federal district, that basically these decisions where the individual right to own a firearm for self-defense, blanket handgun bans are unconstitutional, and trigger lock provisions were unconstitutional. But it was only applied at the federal level until a little bit later, a couple years later in 2010, where the case of McDonald versus City of Chicago, the court ruled, also in a 5-4 decision with Alito and Scalia involved, basically extending the protections of Heller to the states. And so basically this is a situation where the cases are leaning in the Second Amendment supporters' direction, and that upsets Hillary Clinton, because basically, you know, now that Scalia is dead, and honestly, it's been said, not directly but an inference by the Clinton campaign, that because now that Scalia's obstruction is out of the way and he's no longer a roadblock to gun control, then they're going to get, that's what they're going after. And here's the quote, and this comes from a policy advisor who was talking with Bloomberg Politics. Says that basically Clinton believes Heller was wrongly decided, and that cities and states should have the power to craft common sense laws to keep their residents safe, like safe storage laws to prevent toddlers from accessing guns. In overturning Washington, D.C.'s safe storage law, Clinton worries that Heller may open the door to overturning thoughtful, common sense safety measures in the future. You notice that when the liberals want to take your guns, it's common sense. But when you want to defend yourself against the threat of attack, rape, you know, other things with a firearm, then somehow you are creating a dangerous situation.
Well, that's a different story, you see.
That's a different story for them. That's right.
Yeah.
You listen to these things, and I've got a video, and I think I sent it over to you, and I probably didn't, but I'll get it over to you so we can load it up. But this is a video of a speech that was given by one Chelsea Clinton, who happens to be the daughter of Hillary Rodham Clinton and Bill, who is out on the stump right now campaigning for her mom. And in this video clip, and again, I'm getting it sent over to you now to post up since you've got all of our since you're our technical guru, and I wouldn't know how to do it if I tried. basically, I want to run this clip that Chelsea was up, and she was talking about how we've got an opportunity now on the Supreme Court, now that we've gotten now that basically Scalia's out of the way. So, in other words, this is what the left is really – this is what they're banking on, you know. They want this – the whole enchilada. Now that, you know, there's an opening on the Supreme Court, they want to control who they put on the Supreme Court. And they are wanting to swing a 5-4 decision pro-gun to 5-4 decisions anti-gun. Because if you remember, Scalia would have been in those five in the Heller and the McDonald cases – but now that he's gone, if you can put a leftist gun grabber on the court, then you get 5-4 decisions going the other way, and they could reverse, unravel, undo, and completely shatter any of the protections that the court recognized just by having a – and, of course, Chuck, it isn't like they wouldn't have a number of cases coming up out of circuits like, oh, the D.C. Circuit or the Ninth Circuit out in California – or some of the more liberal circuits in the country, maybe the Seventh Circuit is where Chicago is, I believe, or the Fifth, maybe.
You got me. You know that better than I do.
I know, and I don't even know it all that well, I hate to admit. But so basically, you've got all this situation where there are going to be plenty of opportunities if the wrong person gets picked for the state or the U.S. Supreme Court seat, where gun rights, Second Amendment rights, are going to go by the wayside in 5-4 decisions, or, you know, and sometimes it might be 6-3 decisions, because you never know where John Roberts is going to land on a case.
Well, that's right. And the fact is, remember when he was going to help be part of the Savior, he was going to be the Savior Coalition, and he grew in office very fast, apparently. If you know the euphemism, basically people who come in as supposedly as conservative and then conduct themselves as a liberal in court proceedings on the federal bench are said by the news media to have quote unquote grown in office.
Yes.
Well, that it's interesting when someone goes right of center there and votes against what the news media wants to see, they are never considered to have grown in office. They've become strident and bigoted. So, that being said, this idea of the importance, you know, I went off on a tangent, and I'm going to do it again.
Oh, please, go right ahead. I love these tangents.
I went off on a tangent about illegality. The Constitution is very clear. The federal government does not have the right in any way to infringe on the ownership of any weapon at all. Now, people would say, that means you want the people to be able to own bazookas and machine guns and tanks and mortars and blah, blah, blah. Well, not necessarily. I think the people should be able to hold some of those offensive weapons, but they wouldn't hold them themselves. The way the militias were designed was that towns, for instance, and would go together and buy a cannon. And then that cannon would be held in a place where the militia gathered. And who was the militia? Well, there were two militias. There was the unorganized militia and the organized militia. The organized militia was basically called into service, and the unorganized militia was essentially trained so they would be ready according to regulations set by Congress. All you have to do is read Article 1, and that's where Congress is given the power to train and equip, actually, the militia in the tactics and the weapons and all the things that would be needed to properly defend the country. So this idea that somehow we can replace one Supreme Court judge and all of a sudden the Second Amendment means whatever we want it to say, there's something wrong with that. That's not the design of the government, and that's where I say there's illegality all around, because the federal government isn't allowed to discuss anything to restrict private ownership of weapons. Restriction of things like mortars and machine guns and bazookas is in the hands of state governments. Period. And in fact, if the federal government requires, and this is one thing they can do, they can require that all members of the militia, which, by the way, are all able-bodied people between certain ages, usually it used to be 16 and 55 was normally the age for militia service. And that means everybody between 16 and 55 not only was required to bivouac and train, but they were also required to bring a weapon. And if a weapon couldn't bring one, they were required to get one in some way. Mm-hmm, and sometimes that meant that the state had to supply it. And they would supply one that was to the regulation that the government had set. This is in the days before a standing army. And, you know, we can go into the history of how that all changed. It was a series of laws, and after the war, the Spanish-American War, because there were some states who, when they were called up for the Spanish-American War, said, "You're not using our militia for a war of conquest. We're not interested." And therefore, they said, "We have to find a way." The federal government said, "We have to find a way to get everybody to come up into service, whether they want to or not." So they started passing the things like the Dick Act that essentially created the National Guard, which are federal troops under state control, mm-hmm, temporarily. And so that's why that's not where we're going, but I wanted people to understand the federal government has no right whatsoever, no power, no authority to restrict ownership of any weapon. That is a local and state responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's absolutely right. But, and again, and the Supreme Court with Antonin Scalia on the bench understood that, and that's the reason why they extended the protection provisions of the Heller decision to the states with the McDonald case to make sure that the states understood that, you know, even like D.C., municipalities and states can't prohibit the right of the individual to keep and bear arms. The Second Amendment should be an inviolable right, although we know full well that in many instances with many things like magazine sizes, suppressor issues, or even directly with concealed carry requirements and permits and, you know, required training and licensing and everything else, that's really basically what they're getting down to is taking away the rights of the citizens to be able to keep and bear arms in a way that they see fit. So that's kind of what we're talking about. Now, I don't know if you've got that clip ready, Chuck, if you've got that lined up.
For Chelsea?
The Chelsea clip.
I do. How my okay. Here it goes.
Matters to me that my mom also recognizes the role the Supreme Court has when it comes to gun control. With Justice Scalia on the bench, one of the few areas where the court actually had an inconsistent record relates to gun control. Sometimes the court upheld local and state gun control measures as being compliant with the Second Amendment, and sometimes the court struck them down. So if you listen to Moms Demand Action and the Brady campaign, kind of major efforts pushing for smart, sensible, and enforceable gun control across our country, which in disclosure have endorsed my mom, they say they believe the next time the court rules on gun control will make a definitive ruling. So it matters to me that my mom's the only person running for president who not only constantly makes that connection, but also has a strong record on gun control and standing up to the NRA. This is one of those issues I didn't know I could care more about until I became a mother. And I think every day about the Sandy Hook families whose children every day don't come home from school. And I can't even imagine that living horror and tragedy.
Well, there it is, Barry.
Well, there it is. So, you know, here is, you know, here's Chelsea Clinton, who is definitely campaigning for her mom. She basically said it. I've endorsed her and said, well, which, you know, it's no surprise. But basically saying that, okay, now that Scalia's out of the way, we have a chance to have more consistent decisions on gun control, i.e., we can get our way now because he's gone. And that should bother many people. During this election cycle, because, well, we'll know at the end of next month, Chuck, whether or not Hillary Clinton will be the nominee for the Democratic Party. It's presumptive right now, although the Bernie Sanders supporters of the world are already making a large noise about not supporting that nomination when it comes to the convention in Philadelphia. As a matter of fact, you and I offline talked about some of the huge noises they're planning on.
Well, that's a fun way of putting it, because to put it in a way that's acceptable for radio.
Well, yes, and we should do that.
They're going to have a flatulence in, if you will, using the four-letter word for flatulence or gas. They're going to serve Bernie delegates. They're going to have a big lunch on the day that Hillary is supposed to do her acceptance speech. They're going to do a big lunch, and they're going to serve everybody beans for the purpose that while Hillary is giving her speech, that the Bernie supporters will flatulate at will and as necessary. And you might say that they're going to be raising a stink.
That was bad.
I'll be quite honest. This is so typical of the whole Bernie support thing. I mean, it's just low. It's a completely low way of looking at everything. We don't like you, therefore we're going to flatulate in your general direction if you're aware of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The Frenchman,
I'm aware of it, yes.
The Frenchman in the fort, when I flatulate in your general direction was one of the epithets that the Frenchman hurled at the King Arthur and his members of the Round Table as they searched for the Grail. Except they used the other four-letter word. So this is the kind of thing that we can expect. But what's interesting about this is you sent this over in an article from the Gateway Pundit, and yep. They to put the cap on it, they basically said the left is coming after your guns. This is not a conspiracy. They're actually saying it. And look, Barack Obama has said it. Chuck Schumer has said it. They don't say it on the Sunday morning programs, but they say it in speeches to groups where they know that it's friendly and then it's not being recorded. Now, people make a written record that it was said, but it doesn't matter because they say, well, I never said that. Well, yeah, you did. The fact is, the left is coming after your guns. This is not a conspiracy. They're actually saying it. Bottom line.
Bottom line. That's exactly right.
What's interesting, you know, my children are safe because I want my children to be safe in the school because there won't be any guns and therefore my children will be safe in school. That's false. That's completely false. In places where there is strong gun control, in for instance, in England, there have been people that shot up schools because they did have a gun. It was had illegally. Guns aren't banned, but you can't have one in operating condition. You definitely can't have a semi-automatic. I've been to England, and I've been to people who collect guns, and when you have, for instance, the bolt-action rifle, it has to be stored in a lockable storage facility with the bolt out. I mean, this is the kind of silliness I've always thought people must not be thinking very clearly, because, you know, you should always store your guns in a locked container with the magazines kept someplace else. And I'm like, okay, so if somebody breaks in my house in the middle of the night with the intent of doing me great bodily harm, I need to have a referee come in and say, okay, stop, Mr. Burglar, while Mr. Michaelis has the time to retrieve the key for his locked container and the key for the place where he keeps his magazines, and he has to have time to get it all together and put the magazine in the gun, then I'll blow the whistle and you can all go. You think that's the way this works?
Oh, of course not.
I mean, this is the silliest thing I ever heard. Now, if you've got little kids in the house, do you leave a gun someplace where they might find it and play with it and get hurt? No, that's also irresponsible. There are ways to make sure that doesn't happen. But I bought a newer gun several years ago after the big craze. And what did it come with? It came with a lock that you could run through the barrel and the receiver. You know what I did with that thing? I think I gave it to my kids to use it as a bike lock. Because it's useless. A gun lock means basically what you've got is a $700 hammer.
Yeah, that'd be about it.
Or you can use it as a paperweight, but you know it's useless. You might be able to put it on the end of a broom handle and use it as a club if necessary, but a locked gun is no good. So if you want to be able to defend yourself, it's got to have the bullets in it, and it's got to be ready to go. Nobody has, you know, Chelsea Clinton has access to bodyguards. We don't.
Yes, she does. But, you know, Chuck, you said that, and it kind of leads to another particular thing, because, you know, first of all, in order to get a gun, you have to be able to buy one, right? Unless you trade or barter with people, you know, and that's your choice, because not too many of us know how to make our own guns, right? Not too many of us have machine shops or the specialties to make our own firearms. Some of us do, and that's wonderful. But then you have to buy a gun, and of course, then you run into some situations there too, because, you know, now that we have background checks and waiting periods and things of that nature in various places, and that's part of what the Heller and the McDonald decisions were trying to stop. We're stopping the what they considered to be irrational restrictions or delays upon a person exercising their constitutional right under the Second Amendment. Well, here's another story, and you and I both had talked about this a little bit earlier, where, you know, right there was an article that came out, I think it was from a writer at the New York Post, right after the Orlando shooting, basically fawning over how scary and dangerous and nasty and how much trauma he faced when going out on a range with an instructor to fire an AR-15 or a .223. You know, we kind of laughed about that a little bit because, you know, obviously this guy either was completely living under a rock for most of his adult life, or he was writing hyperbole in order to try to, you know, extend a point he was trying to make, which was these guns are bad and scary and only the military should have them, and why we think it's okay, you know, for people to personally possess these dangerous, dangerous weapons of war. You know, again, it's ridiculous. Now, I think it's funny, Chuck, because maybe there's a prerequisite for journalism school that you have to basically check your backbone and your testosterone at the door, or your common sense, one of the two. Because, you know, we've got an article here out of Breitbart today where a journalist in Chicago decided, you know, for his story, he was going to write on how easy it is to get one of these deadly weapons of war, these AR-15s, or as we commonly and lovingly refer to them, these little black guns. And so Neil Steinberg, who's a journalist from Chicago, decided that he was going to go and go to his the local gun shop. And yes, he had to go outside of Chicago to a town called Des Plaines, Illinois. Yeah. Because, you know, I don't think you can actually... Are there any legal gun shops in Chicago Chuck?
You got me. I would doubt it. But
I would doubt it, seriously, with the amount of gun control that supposedly... You know, Chicago is one of the top, I think, five... cities in the United States with the most restrictive gun control measures, but yet they tend to be in the top three in the country of all places that have the most homicides by firearm. And as a matter of fact, over this last weekend, there were almost as many people shot in Chicago with a firearm as were killed in the Pulse nightclub in Orlando by Omar Mateen. But yet, gun control will solve all of our problems, Chuck, right? Well, in one sense, I think Steinberg, maybe this is the way he's going to switch his article. This is a gun control really works because it does keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people, including Neil Steinberg. Because when he went to Maxon Shooter Supply in Des Plaines, Illinois, he basically came in and got an identification card. And he filled out the background check form, and then he had to wait 24 hours, because that's their requirement, before picking up his gun. Well, in that 24-hour period, that gun store, which, like the vast majority of others, and I can't say all others, Chuck, because there's probably a couple of them out there that run a little fast and loose, and you know, they're the ones that the media will run to as the cause of all the problems in society. But Maxon seems to be very responsible because they made him fill out the form, they did the check, and it was during the background check, that 24-hour wait, that Maxon decided, we can't sell this man a firearm. Why? Did they find out that he was a journalist who was writing an attack story on gun rights? No, not hardly. What they did find out is that he had domestic abuse criminal charges against him in the past, and an admitted history of alcohol abuse.
Well,
so be careful of what you wish for. You might just get it. And so basically when he went to get a Smith & Wesson M&P AR-15 and with a 30-round magazine, because he wanted to make sure it had a standard issue 30-rounder.
Which isn't the standard issue, by the way.
He was,
not on an AR-15.
He was pulled up short. What's that?
An AR-15 is not a standard 30. Depending on what make you buy. I have a Colt, and it had a 10.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what he wanted, you know, and he wanted so that he could write this article about how easy it was for anybody to come in off the street and buy this deadly weapon of war. Now, listen to that phrase, Chuck. I've said it three times now, weapon of war, because that's what you're hearing from the liberal left right now. Sherrod Brown is out there saying it in Ohio. All of the leftists who have been pushing gun control, you're going to hear it from Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. You're going to hear it from Chuckie Schumer. Probably the only person you're not going to hear it from maybe is Joe Manchin, who I guess after making his tremendous slip up in West Virginia by coming out and saying, well, due process is kind of, you know, that's the only thing that's keeping us from being able to really hammer down on these, you know, mass shootings, is that we have to go through this, you know, pesky due process thing. And if we just basically said, if you get on the watch list or you're investigated by the FBI, you lose all your civil rights for 5 years until you can prove that you're a good citizen, and then you get them back. That didn't go over so well for Joe, so when the Senate pulled up there a number of provisions here in this last week to vote on this gun control issue, all of which failed, by the way, none of them made enough votes to get cloture, which I think is a good thing, because most of them were to restrict your constitutional rights in one way or the other. Joe Manchin voted against moving these things forward. So
yeah.
Obviously he must have heard from his constituency in West Virginia that if he wanted to remain their United States senator, it was time for him to, you know, have a come to Jesus meeting with the folks back home.
He might be done anyway, but that being said,
he most likely is going to be done anyway. I have a good friend who is a Democrat office holder in West Virginia, which isn't a surprise. Most of them are. I have Republican friends who are office holders too. But we were chatting this last week, and I asked him, I said, so is Senator Manchin getting lonely for the hills of West Virginia? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, you didn't see what he said on a news program here the other day about taking away our due process rights, and it, this you know, due process, you know, we just kind of needed to waive that and put everybody on a watch list, and you know, kind of hyperbolic, but. So anyhow, he's shaking his head and he goes, I don't know what he's thinking. He goes, that is guaranteed to make sure he's not going to come back again.
Yeah, it's absurd. Now, did you see what this reporter, by the way, the gun that he chose?
Yeah, it says in the article, and this article is from Breitbart.com that we're looking at, written by A.W.R. Hawkins. Basically says that he looked at a Smith & Wesson M&P AR-15.
Yeah, do you know what that gun costs?
Oh, I'm sure that that gun's probably about a $3,000 gun.
Yeah. That's an
expensive. So, that's a very expensive AR-15 or 223 model, because most of the time you can get those anywhere from about $800 to about $1,600, depending upon the model you get. You know, and again, that's still not a minor purchase for
no,
most
No, it's
people.
Not. It's so, not. I mean,
that's an investment most people make. You're either collecting them or you're wanting something that you know is, you know, going to do the job for home defense, and you've saved up the money and you've thought about it. These aren't whim purchases. These aren't people who went down to the local convenience store and bought a dollar scratch-off ticket, set, you know, won $1,000, and immediately ran to the gun store and wanted that pretty little black gun up there.
Well, look,
you know, that's not usually the way that happens.
Let's talk about some of these reporter shenanigans as well. There was a potential violation of federal law here.
Oh, yes, there was.
Okay, Katie Couric got in trouble for, in her, this quote-unquote documentary, it's a fake-umentary, where they doctored it to make it look like the gun control opponents couldn't come up with the answers. They were asking these questions that had no answers. Okay, that's not one of the major, I mean, that's a problem, obviously. But that's not the major problem, because what Katie Couric engaged in, they sent in a producer to do this. Obviously, Katie didn't do it herself. They sent in a producer to buy a gun for third parties. Well, Barry, that's called a straw purchase.
That is called a straw purchase, and it is illegal under federal law.
It is a major league fine and major league jail time. And guess what? What's interesting about that is another reporter went out and decided to show how easy it was to buy an AR-15, and bought one. It wasn't that easy. Let's face it; it's not that easy. You got to jump through the hoops.
Right.
You got to go through the background check, which is what caught this reporter we're talking about. But this one also basically came out and wrote in her article that she bought the gun and gave it to the company that she was working for. That is a straw purchase.
Yes, it is.
Now, once you buy it and hold it for a time, you can do what you want with it. I mean, essentially, you can sell it in a private transaction.
Right, but if you go in and buy it and immediately turn it around within 24 hours or 40 hours, whatever time frame it is, and, you know, sell it or provide it to someone else who either can't qualify to own a firearm because they couldn't pass a background check, like our Chicago journalist Neil Steinberg, or others who maybe have a criminal record or who are using it for other nefarious purposes. Yeah, that's a federal offense. But you know, Steinberg didn't even have that chance, because basically he is not of what they would consider fit moral character on his background check. He has a history of alcohol abuse and a charge for domestic battery involving his wife. In other words, he's a wife beater. And so how does he respond to this, Chuck? He moans and groans. Well, would-be terrorists can buy guns. Insane people can buy guns. But reporters, oh, well, that's a different story. So in other words, he's trying to spin it that he was denied his gun by this gun store because he was a reporter and he was going to not say nice things about how easy it was to get a gun. And so... It's like, no, they have a fiduciary responsibility and a legal responsibility.
Well,
that if that background check comes back with things that disqualify someone, they cannot sell them a firearm. And he could have tried to move down from the Smith & Wesson M&P AR-15 down to a pea shooter, and they still wouldn't have been able to sell him a firearm.
Let me make a comment about something you actually said about, you know, FFL holders, federal firearms license holders, who
right.
who aren't necessarily ethical. You know what happens to FFLs who aren't ethical?
They lose usually end up going to federal prison.
Or they at least lose their FFL because yeah. the paperwork is a nightmare. My late father-in-law
mm-hmm.
was an FFL. He made his living selling guns. And
yep.
his main thing was muzzle loaders, but he sold everything. He sold pistols, he sold rifles, he sold semi-automatics, he sold unusual guns, all kinds of things. I can remember when he died, he had a lot of things checked into the shop that we had to get back to the owners. They came in for gunsmith work.
Right.
And we had to get back to the owners, and Jenny, my wife, Jenny, trying to contact these people and get the guns back to them, and they would describe the gun, and she goes, I have no idea what that is. And I said, okay, it's in the main rack, it's in this room, it's blah, blah, because I'd scoped it out, and I'm like, oh, I'd like to have that. So I knew exactly
now, for full disclosure, you didn't take anybody's firearms.
I took no one's firearm.
Everything was returned.
That's right.
Because I remember you guys doing this, even to the point of tracking people down to get them their guns.
We had some people we did have to track down to get their guns back to them, and in fact, at one point we'd sent guns off to auction, up to a gun auction that we thought belonged to my father-in-law, and they in fact were someone else's gun that wasn't logged in properly, because you know everybody messes on the paperwork occasionally, and we had to call back the auction company and say, you got to send that gun back. So but that's many years ago now, but that being said, he forgot to file something once. And let me tell you, man, the ATF came down on him like a ton of bricks. So don't kid yourself. If the paperwork isn't in order and the background checks aren't done and all the fancy stuff isn't done. And one of the questions, by the way, on the form, on the background, are you buying this for a third party? Which means that
yep.
the people who did buy for a third party and had to lie about it, which means they committed perjury because it's a sworn statement.
Yes, it is.
So all this stuff about how easy it is to buy an AR-15 or any gun. AR-15 is the current bad guy, even though that wasn't the gun that was used at Orlando. And by the way, the guy who used it would have been able to get a gun no matter what because he worked for a security company and had federal clearance.
Yep.
And so answer me why. That's the question. There is an article that I read today, and we're not going to put it up because it's just too much to dig it up, and I'm just going to mention
sure.
it in passing. But there's a proposed gun control law that says that this law might have stopped this fellow from having a gun. And it's basically, if you're even accused, not convicted, but accused of domestic violence, it would have automatically stopped it. And I'm like, well, okay, there are so many problems in that. An accusation is as good as a conviction. I see major problems with that. In the same way, I've seen major problems with this don't fly list, because there are so many falses on the don't fly list. Not only that, there's a back door. If you think about the back door, all you got to do to make sure that nobody can a certain person can't buy a gun is to make sure they get on the no-fly list. Do you know how easy it is to get you on the no-fly list? Homeland Security?
Well, I don't know exactly how easy it is, but I've understood that it's pretty easy.
Yeah. That's the problem with it. We'll just put everybody on the no-fly list, and then they can't fly, and they can't have a gun. Well, again, that is so problematic on its face, and it flies in the face of the Second Amendment. Who's supposed to set it up that you can't buy a gun? Well, it's supposed to be your state and local government, not the federal government. How have we done it? We're in reverse. The state and local government have no say. The federal government is the only one that has the final say. So now, again,
now, but don't worry, Chuck, because you know when the federal government is fully controlled by leftist Democrats, then we'll have this basically utopia of gun safety with all the gun-free zones, because we know full well that in these wild-eyed, you know, crazy Wild West red states in the United States, that's where all the big shootings happen. That's where all the trouble is. And if they just would put in these common sense restrictions on these weapons of war, then it'd all be better for everybody.
Well,
because that's what liberals say.
Here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with that, Barry. In the Daily Caller, and I sent you a copy of this article. Hopefully you got it. In the Daily Caller,
I did.
There is an article entitled "Progressive Outlet Accidentally Proves Blue States Have 42% More Mass Shootings." Now, what that means is blue states are essentially, not entirely, but essentially where most of the gun control laws are in place and enacted.
Right. Now, places, and now blue state would be places like Massachusetts. Vermont would be considered a blue state. Illinois would be considered a blue state. I mean,
now hold on.
And usually by blue state, they mean that either they vote primarily, you know, majority Democrat during presidential elections, or that they are controlled at their state level, you know, either have a Democrat governor or Democrat legislature.
Well, let's leave Vermont out of the picture, because it's, as Vermont often is, it's an outlier. I think Vermont,
it's an outlier. That's true.
Vermont has constitutional carry. If I'm not mistaken, Vermont has constitutional carry. Now, okay, I just used a flash word. Constitutional carry means, essentially, you can carry as long as you're not restricted by some, you know, a felony conviction or something like that. You can just carry one. I'm pretty sure it's Vermont is one of those places where.
Sure. Well, actually, I meant to say Connecticut, because that's where Sandy Hook was.
Oh, I got you. Well,
I was trying to make a point about mass shootings in blue states, because, you know, right now everybody's focusing on Orlando, which is in Florida, which is kind of considered a red state. So, but you're right. In this article that was posted on the Daily Caller by Andrew Follett, who's their energy and environmental reporter, it shows that blue states have 42% more mass shootings than red states when you adjust for population. And basically, this was a study that was published by Vox, which is a internet-based media outlet for progressives. I've looked at some stuff on Vox, and yeah, they're pretty progressive. But basically, the Daily Caller News Foundation analyzed this data and showed that basically, of the mass shootings listed by Vox, 543 occurred in blue states, 330 occurred in red states. So, and the funny thing they found, and I thought this was like when you're digging into the data and doing some deep diving, they say that places where Democrats controlled the state legislature were even more likely to have mass shootings than the average blue state. So basically, 42% more likely to occur in blue state are mass shootings. And usually those are places where leftist Democrats are in control of the government.
Okay. And the places that had the most mass shootings for the most part, per capita, was in the places where the gun laws are the most restrictive. Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Washington, D.C., Maryland, Illinois, all those places. Now, what's interesting, I'm going to bring one up that a lot of people may have forgotten about, and maybe not. It's in the back of their mind, and that is the last big mass shooting perpetrated by a Muslim, multiple people. You remember where that was? California.
California, yeah.
And what's the bluest of the blue states? Just about.
Well, California's pretty doggone blue. I mean, Massachusetts is a nice deep shade of royal blue, but I think California goes even bluer than that.
But you know, Kamala Harris basically going through. If you've ever taken an antidepressant advertently or inadvertently, you're basically unable to own a gun, according to what Kamala Harris says.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Who knows what your doctor, half the time, you know, people take a pill, the doctor writes them a pill, they don't know what it's for, and they take it, and they come to find out later, oh, I put you on antidepressants, why'd you do that? Well, you had high blood pressure, and I wanted to make sure, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. And it's sort of like, well, that's the dumbest thing you can do is give them an antidepressant because of stuff like Xanax is a mood leveler. In other words, if you're depressed, it'll bring it up. If you're excited, it'll bring it down. And in some people, antidepressants will raise your blood pressure. But I've seen doctors do that. But that being the case, this is a very interesting article in that aspect, in that they were going to show how all these red states with all these loose gun control laws had more mass killings and mass shootings, and the answer is wrong. And completely wrong. So, that's called being hoist by your own petard.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, some of the things that come out, the attempts, the recent activity of the Justice Department, especially the FBI, releasing the transcript of the conversations with the shooter in Orlando while he held the hostages in the bathrooms, just are stunning to me, that the whole idea that we're going to redact them. And in fact, then they said they weren't going to redact them, but when they released them, they translated them. When they finally after tremendous pressure, because it became obvious to everybody that the meme that they're trying to set up, the whole thing they're trying to set up, is the idea that it's about gun violence and guns too readily available, when in fact what it was about was radical Islam. And the idea, people say, well, this guy was a homosexual and he was, so how can this be? Why would he wipe out other homosexuals? That's as easy as pie to understand when you understand how Islam works. This man's belief was that by executing homosexuals, he was saved. In other words, salvation came by doing this act of jihad. He was saved from his own sin of homosexuality by wiping out these other people that were homosexual. Now, we've talked about this last week, and I'll reiterate it. The fact is that this man realized he couldn't go over to ISIS-controlled areas and give himself over to the Islamic State, because they would have, if they found out what his proclivities were, they would have given him a mock trial and taken him up to the top of a roof and thrown him off, hands tied, or they would have just cut his head off, one or the other. So he decided to do his radicalization thing here, where he's free to do what he wants to do until he's ready to become a martyr. That's what the bottom line here is. It had nothing to do with the ready availability of guns, because this guy would have gotten one anyway.
Right, exactly.
All these laws.
But that doesn't fit the meme that the left is going
exactly.
for.
Exactly.
It's those weapons of war, those scary black guns, that are the cause of all the social problems in our society. And if we just, use common sense and surrender these ridiculous gun rights to government so that they can tell us who can and can't have a firearm. Well, and we know who that is. The elites, the political folks, and the military and the police can all have the guns, but common citizens can't. And, Chuck, when we come back next time, I'm going to talk a little bit about why sometimes conservatives, and I know we hate using that word, but we folks who are constitutionalists sometimes have to line up with some of these liberals when it comes to constitutional rights issues.
Well, sure. You can play knee-jerk all day. You can knee-jerk into reality. I've caught myself knee-jerking into things. And I said, wait a minute, let's think about this. Let's think through this for a second. Barry, this is being able to think critically about these issues is of absolute importance. I'm reminded of an article that I sent over to you that was written in the tone of a satire.
Satire, yes.
And it was essentially so laden with logical fallacy that it completely crippled any possibility that this guy who wrote the article could claim to have any kind of moral high ground. It was Florida rape victim skirts waiting period and performs her own abortion with an AR-15. Now, you know, this couldn't possibly have happened, and it didn't. It's couched in terms of someone got pregnant by rape and couldn't get an abortion, and therefore they found a gun manufacturer who had an attachment for an AR-15 that could be used to self-perform an abortion. She stumbled upon a fact that she has completely changed everything in Florida. Well, rape victims have to wait a full day to get an abortion. Anyone can buy an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle with absolutely no waiting period whatsoever. I'm pretty sure that's false. I'm pretty sure that you have to wait until the background check is done, and then you can...
Yes, you do have to wait. And of course, what he's hearkening to is the thing called instant check. And of course, instant check, I mean, if it comes back, you really don't have anything. If there's no record out there, then why should you have to wait?
Yeah.
If you haven't done anything wrong, you shouldn't have restrictions on your rights to possess your Second Amendment freedoms.
And, you know, the article goes on to claim that, you know, Bushmaster has a special line of you abort it rifle accessories that can be added to the AR-15, allowing it to be used with surgical precision. Well, some of us can do surgical precision with a firearm, but it has nothing to do with an attachment. The sights are generally good enough to get that job done. Here's one of the quotes. It turns out my state isn't the only one that sees zero irony in making weapons of wanton death and destruction easy to get while making a safe and legal, constitutionally protected medical service as hard to have performed as possible. And so Bushmaster developed a whole product line for red state women like me who still want to have control over our own reproduction. Silly us. Well, okay, what's wrong with this picture?
Inadvertently, the satirist, this comedian, this humorist who wrote this, really is admitting more than I think he really would want to admit, and I certainly would not, more than what the left, the Cecile Richards and the Hillary Clintons of the world, would want him to admit, and that is that the taking of an unborn life through abortion is the moral equivalent of an Omar Mateen taking an AR-15 in this case, or an AK-47, and shooting down a room full of people. Murder is murder.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how big or how small.
Well, not only that. Think about what this sentence says. A constitutionally protected medical service. Well, how about a constitutionally mandated right to keep and bear arms? Because what this person, this writer, who, by the way, negates his own argument in his own description, the comedian writer, James Schlarman, comedian writer, comedian being in quotes, for as far as I'm concerned, founding contributor of the Political Garbage Chute. Well, a great name for where this would be posted. Holder of zero world records or lifetime achievements. Or lifetime achievement awards. Yeah, and you're not going to get any writing like this. But the fact is that the right to keep and bear arms is a constitutionally protected right. And I will be quite honest, where you can find the right to commit murder as a reproductive freedom is not in the Constitution. Despite it's supposedly in the umbras and penumbras of the Fourth Amendment. No, it's not. Because all you have to do is go over to the Fifth Amendment and you will see, I don't think the umbras and penumbras obscured the Fifth Amendment, which said basically that you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Well, you are depriving an unborn child the right to life, liberty, and property without due process of law in an abortion.
You are, absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Now, with that being said, guess what? We're out of time.
I figured we would be.
So that was a good way to end up this discussion, with a really bad logical fallacy. This is a logical fallacy playground, this article. And I wish I had time to talk about that, but I don't. Okay.
And next week, Chuck, we're going to talk a little bit more about how we constitutional conservatives sometimes end up lining up with hardcore liberals rather than evangelical conservatives.
It can happen.
When it comes to these issues. It happens.
So you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. There's contact information in there. And be with us again next week for another Principles and Policies.